1, 2, 3.
Welcome to episode 5 of That Soundacious, a guided tour through the world of independent folk music. I'm John Voorhees, and this week I'm returning to the scene of the crime for part 2 of my hard-hitting interview with David Wilcox, conducted by Nashville's Ali Ferris. Make yourself comfortable and save me a few chips.
Soundacious. Soundacious. It's the That's Soundacious Theme Song.
Episode 5, The Wisdom of Wilcox.
I'd be dead by 33. That was my best guess. But hey, here I am this morning, singing happy birthday to me as I clean up all this mess. Because I'm left still alive without warning in the big boat. Seen leather jacket James and Jimmy fan the flames, and those posters will always look younger, but they never knew, and they can't guide us through the long stretch of spiritual hunger.
Makes you feel so alive as long as it is there. And that was how she fell, not pushed by human hands. She was pushed by the eyes all around her. So she fell back into her past, where her beauty mark will last. So the camera could never. Told the rest that he would have his way, and in death he would not be defeated. Maybe it was all for the best, for what he had to say, because he would not always have to repeat it. Die in glory.
message of Christ. Your story is still coming true.
So while I was working on our last episode, Amy Winehouse died. It's going to be a while before the results of the toxicology report are released to the public, but even a casual observer can take an informed guess that on some level, the cause of death was self-inflicted. It's a shame when a brilliant artist becomes a cautionary tale, even more of one when everyone can see it coming and no one can figure out how to stop it. Amy's going to be one of those eternally young figures who represent the white-hot fire of creative pain, in the ranks with Hendrix, Phoenix, Belushi, Cobain, Joplin, Ledger. You fill in the blanks, the list is too long. The point is that fame and fortune have a long track record of taking some people apart bit by bit. Professional success can easily go hand in hand with spectacular personal failure. If a troubled young performer happens to make it big, that can actually make her life much, much worse, because now she can afford lots more rope to hang herself. Of course, I happen to be in the middle of sharing with you an interview that is the ultimate antidote to this point of view. If you haven't listened to episode 4 already, please do that, and then come back to this one, because this is part 2 of a continuing conversation between Nashville up-and-comer Ali Ferris and seasoned pro David Wilcox. I really love the dynamic of this discussion. Ali's a really fine songwriter and a talented performer, very self-confident, and struggling to start a career in Nashville. But somehow, the doors don't seem to be opening. Her image of artistic success is not living up to the reality of the situation. So, she looks to Dave as a successful musician who can perhaps help her with a checklist or a roadmap. Perhaps she missed a step somewhere. But David Wilcox is not your typical music professional. He views his career as a continuing exercise in self-knowledge and awareness. He's a practical romantic. His insights are subtle, profound, and non-intuitive. He is, basically, a guru, and he's trying to impart a deep, unusual wisdom. The interplay between these two sometimes comes off like a folk music koan. Once again, I'm putting up the transcript to this session at thats.soundacious.com because you will probably need to read it over once or twice before it all sinks in. If I were to try to sum up the most important lesson I got from this interview, it is that we probably have a great deal more control over our lives than we tend to realize. We get locked into more predictable patterns because that's what we're told to do, that's what everyone else is doing, and frankly, it's just easier. But among the millions of things that happen to us over a given period of time, there are thousands of things that we can actually make a decision over and steer the ship. These may be decisions as small as what to eat for lunch, and they may be as big as whether to sign a particular contract. But it's important to recognize those moments of potential control for what they are and take advantage of them. But there's a lot more of interest in this interview, and I'm going to get back to it right now. Just a reminder, if you want to picture the scene in your mind, Ali, David, and I are hunched over my little Zoom 2 microphone on a hot, windy Sunday at the Kerrville Folk Festival under the canopy of Camp Stupid. You're not going to hear much out of me because I did not want to interrupt the magic of what was going on here, but you can picture me there, on the right, sitting next to one of my musical heroes, listening to him divulge deep secrets of the ultimate creative life, smiling like a complete idiot.
What else are you afraid of?
Well, I wanted to ask, when you were my age, when you were starting out, at some point when you had this life, the street performing life, you were traveling and playing for anyone who would listen, did you ever find someone that served as a mentor or to guide you?
Yes! There were thousands. And most of them were not musicians.
Okay.
I'll tell you one. I'm a street musician. I just packed up my guitar after the lunch hour. I'm walking down the sidewalk, and I'm feeling kind of torn inside because I just had this conversation with my parents, and they were kind of shaming me. My mother was saying, "Oh, David, are you still doing that that music thing? And I said, well, yeah, I'm really enjoying it. Oh, I'm sorry. What? What do you mean, sorry? Well, I just it's just such a shame if you keep doing this, you know, I mean, I just want you to be happy. And I said, Mom, I said I was happy. Yeah, I know, but, you know, musicians, it's just not, you know, in terms of respectability, it's just like one step above house burglar. I swear to God she said that. Actual quote. And I said, well, at least I've got something to fall back on. But I said, I really feel happy, and I don't know what you're so worried about. And so I'm in the middle of hearing the echoes and repercussions of this conversation in my head, and I'm thinking, God, I really want to do music. Yeah. I don't know how, but I really want to do music. I have this feeling like it's not going to hurt me. But there are people who seem to be hurt by it. And how do I reconcile all this? And I'm walking with my guitar case, and I'm just stopped at a light waiting to cross the street, you know? And I'm just asking. I'm like praying. I'm like looking up and saying, I just don't know if it's right. Like, should I do it? Should I not? And I hear this voice that says, you go ahead and do it. And I look around, I don't see anybody. And I mean, that was just the question that I had just asked in my silent prayer. So I'm looking all around and I hear again, you do it. And I walk back a few steps and there's this guy in a doorway and he's kind of slumped over. And I say, are you okay? And he says, you do it. And I say, do what? And he says, I don't know. And so I went back to the corner and I looked up at the sky and I said, okay, so maybe a burning bush wasn't handy. It's a city.
Yes, it's a city.
But this guy was available. He had a perfectly good larynx, perfectly good voice. Maybe you just spoke through him. He might not even know it. So I looked up at the sky and I said, okay. And the little walk signal changed and I started walking. And that was my answer. And there's thousands and thousands of those when you listen. So yes, there were mentors. There were people who, you know, would say to me, David, you think you have a choice. When you talk about getting a real job, your head sinks down and your eyes get all furrowed, narrowed, and you just kind of start sounding unhappy. And when you talk about music, you just have this light in your eyes.
Yeah.
So you think you have a choice, but there's just an obvious path. So I would hear people say that and it would sound frightening because I would say, am I sort of doomed to this fate? You know, no choice. What do you mean no choice? And yet, when I heard it the way he was saying it, I was remembering that, well, yeah, when I'm letting myself trust in how it makes my heart soar to be around the place where I feel like I'm sort of made to do this. This is the thing that makes me feel alive.
Yeah.
Then it's an easy decision. And over the years, it just keeps feeling new and keeps feeling like I get it at deeper and deeper levels of sort of why I do what I do.
Yeah.
It feels like at this point, it's just the simplest way to, yeah, I guess I've said it, to stay true to where my heart's telling me I'm headed.
I'm the kid who ran away with the circus. Now I am watering elephants. Lie awake in the sawdust, dreaming that I'm in the suit of light. Late at night in the empty big top, I'm all alone on the high. looked out the window, failing the test in geography. But I have seen things far beyond just this schoolyard. There's the spires of the Turkish Empire, 6 months since we made landfall, riding low with the spices of India, through Gibraltar where rich men are.
Okay, here's something I wanted to ask you
yes.
about. I'm handling my own business,
yeah.
quote-unquote business, and I feel that takes away so much of my creativity, my wanting to write and listen, as you say. And did you run into that in your career, like in your early career when you're starting out? Did you, you know, finding the manager, trying to book your shows, working with the business aspect of it, did you have to fight? Like, I feel like I'm fighting.
I think what's miraculous about music is that when we write our songs that are from our truest sort of sense of who we want to be, they not only attract the audience that we want to find, but they attract the people that we want to work with. And the same reasons that you come to music, people will come to you. The same reasons that make you want to work on your songs will make people want to come work with you and for you. And so the people that are drawn to work with you are drawn to you for the same reasons that you're drawn to your music. And so it's this miraculous sorting that happens where the people who come to you and say, I really believe in what you're doing, I'd love to work with you, you've already sorted through the other 1,000 people who wouldn't have been right. The people that you would have gone to because they were successful, the people who maybe didn't get what your specific thing is, but they thought they were good at what they did. Instead, you'll find people who are good at helping you do what you do. And I think the decisions become obvious. And it's sort of like many years ago, I was on a rafting trip and we were on the Salmon River. We were on the Middle Fork. And there's a point where there's this turn that happens when the Middle Fork joins the main Salmon River. You're going through this canyon and you can look straight ahead, way up ahead, and see sort of this mist in the air. And the wind kicks up and you hear this whirling sound. And so you're kind of fearful. You realize change is coming. There's a cacophonous sort of whirlwind around you. And suddenly you're going to be thrust into this big river where this 3 times as much water and the waves are really high. And so when we were on this raft trip, the guide was sort of warning us about this. And he's saying to the people in our little raft, okay, so we'll be making this turn. It'll be the current will just kind of sweep us in and we'll make this turn. And suddenly the waves will be higher than you can see over. And it'll just be this beautiful, big rolling ride. And there was one guy in our boat that was, you know, wanted to be ready because he knew that there was a turn to make. And so he said, I want to be ready. Which way am I turning? Mm-hmm. And the guide kind of smiled and he said, well, I think if you just kind of watch the current, it'll be obvious. And in so many decisions like this, you can't make the turn till you get there. You can't know which way is right until you're feeling it in the flow and somebody comes to you and says, I really believe in what you're doing. And it's just obvious. It's just like, okay, now the river's twice as big. We've just made a turn. I couldn't have planned that, but it just happens. And luckily, it is all in this wonderful sympathetic vibration. The same beautiful harmonics that you're creating with your music also create the opportunities and draw the people to you for the right reasons.
Just one turn to steer your fate, or wait for fate. these days pass you yearning, like empty pages turning. You're holding out for something real. Oh yeah, you can't play pretender, because you still remember just how full your heart can feel. But how long the distance, getting by and getting heartstrong insistence says that nothing else will do. Or you could try on their distractions and wear some empty compromise. But it's hard to breathe inside some cheap disguise. You can live your life completely, that true path you're here to find, or stay scared, leave your destiny behind. It's right now, here's the turning point in time.
Well, I feel like so many new artists my age, the more people that I talk to are very focused on money, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you about that, and focused on getting every single dollar for their CD, and that's what's keeping a lot of people from getting something like a record deal or any deal of any kind. All I want to do in my career is to become a successful and respected songwriter and a musician.
Congratulations, you've done that. I respect your songwriting.
Well, thank you.
So when that happens, when you play a song for one person that moves them and they hear it and they go, oh my God, that song, that made a difference, then it doesn't get any better. Yeah. It can just happen again to another person.
Well, my job isn't over. I do want to be accepted and meet. I mean, I have specific people.
I know, I'm playing with you.
Oh,
but
I know,
at the same time, I realize that a lot of what we want when we're dreaming of sort of success is we want to like walk down the street with this feeling in our hearts that says, the world comes to me and says, thank you for existing. Thank you for being on this planet. Thank you for being who you are. We couldn't have done it without you. And that's what we want. That's the success that says, what I'm doing is necessary and useful. And, you know, and so that is success, right? That feeling of like belonging.
Yeah.
Okay, well, here's the interesting twist. If you look at all the musicians who sell out stadiums and kill themselves, you have to wonder, why don't they feel that? The reason why is because that feeling of knowing that you belong and having that feeling of satisfaction, like you're part of something, like you, the fact that you are alive is a mandate to be your unique self, and it's necessary. It's a part of this whole thing. That feeling, walking down the street, feeling like you belong, is something that you can have today, right now, and tomorrow, and the next day, but it's not something that you could ever try to keep. It's always something that you get with this bizarre sort of opening, with this kind of realizing that, okay, yes, you are part of something, but you can't hold that something. It doesn't come from you. And so the people who get all that acclaim and the numbers and the volume of that attention, you would think that they would wake up in the morning and know it.
Yeah.
But they don't.
Hmm.
And so the practice, if you want that feeling of success, is learn where that feeling comes from. Learn what takes it away. And that will lead you to be a mystic. That will lead you to a deeper, more playful understanding of, you know, sort of what we're a part of. And I think whatever language you find for that, if it's your language, it will work and it will take you to that place. And the reason why it's so important to get that is because in any career, you know, a career has to grow. It has to grow like a tree. It has to grow up. It has to try to reach for higher heights. You know, you have to try more complicated musical things. You have to try and, you know, write a play. You have to try and write, you know, songs that have interesting time signatures and epic lyric. And so the tree has to grow up. It has to strive for excellence.
Yeah.
But a tree also has to grow out. It has to reach, like, try to cover more, reach more, like, offer more. Like, if it's an apple tree, it wants to send apples this way and that and really, like, be a big, glorious tree. So, yes, you want your music to spread out and reach more people. But mostly, a tree has to grow roots. It has to grow down into your life. The music has to come from a place where, when you are ready to walk out on stage and you're scared because you feel like, oh man, I don't have it tonight. I don't have that sense of mystic wonder. When you've got nothing, you've got to know where to get it. You've got to have roots for the dry times. And that is the discipline of finding out what gives you that feeling of belonging, of being part of something, that sense of wonder, that sense of awe, that sense of beauty, that sense of this kind of effortless, open, kind of just let the song play itself, you know? And so that practice is going to be so satisfying because as much as you practice your instrument and practice your voice and practice your writing, you know, what's much more important is practicing your connection, practicing where that all comes from, practicing your remembering of the reason why we do music, not just how to, but why to.
Yeah.
And it's the why to, the roots of it, that will give you the strength in the dry times. And so success, that feeling of belonging, being part of it, being a sense of like, man, I'm so glad I did what I did with my life because it turned out so well. That's something that you can have right now and you can have tomorrow. But, you know, each time you have to open and let it come to you. You can't try to grab it and keep it and own it. It's not something that the world can give you. It's a practice of growing deep, deep, deep roots.
Summer lasted a generation, a generation, and then the winter wind, the bounty harvest that seems so endless, it seems so endless, till it gave what it could give. Prosperity will have its seasons, and even when it's here, it's going by. And when it's gone, we pretend we know the reasons, and all the roots grow deeper when it's dry. Looked so easy, we changed the weather, and we would turn this world ourselves, our world, so small, but slower rhythms, still unheard of, said that every blessed summer someday has to fall. Prosperity will have its seasons, and even when it's here, it's going by. And when it's gone, we pretend we know the reasons, and all the roots grow deeper.
Over the years, have this long career that you've had, have you, do you think you've been able to retain your originality and finding new ways to express yourself through songs and new songs, just finding new songs? I think you kind of have answered my question that I'm asking right now earlier by saying continually listen, and there's always new things to say in the world.
Well, I think for that, I am grateful to people like you, because output equals input. And if you really want to be inspired and believe in the next song you're going to write, you have to go hear other songs. You have to hear people who are reinventing the wheel and making it brand new, and kind of remember that, you know, there are no rules, and you can write about stuff you didn't even know it was possible, that you didn't even know a song could hold an idea like that. And you hear people who are, you know, one verse to the next are staking out huge territory in a song and having a chorus that puts this amazing spin on it, as if suddenly the camera's in an aerial view, and you have a song that isn't just sort of the way you expected it to be. It opens up. And so I come away from these song circles and I realize I haven't begun to scratch the surface, and I have to come back and be humbled about what music is asking of me to imagine. So in terms of, you know, over the years, as you get better and better at doing what you do, the inspiration always has to be output equals input, and I'm grateful that I get to come hear people like you.
Thank you so much. And Kerrville has really served as, I feel like, an energetic re-energizing of me, and I feel like it's kind of, like you said, reawakened or made me feel like I haven't scratched the surface in writing and wanting to write new songs, because I've heard so much. I guess that's the key, is just to keep listening.
Yeah, you're listening at all levels.
Yeah. Have you been able to have, I think one of the other things, I really love family, and I love sharing relationships with people.
Mm-hmm.
And being on the road for so many years and playing so many shows, do you feel like you've had to give some of that up?
Great question. No, you don't have to give it up. But what you do have to do is you have to find somebody who has been in a relationship that didn't leave them room to breathe. And they are the kind of person who needs to reconnect with who they are and what they love. And so they choose to be with someone who travels some. They choose to be with someone who will go do what they do and be happy doing it and come back with stories to tell and a big smile. And while they're gone, the house gets empty, and it gives them a chance to remember, okay, who do they call? And what do they do? And what do they read? And what movies do they go see? And how do they make their life complete? You don't want to find someone who wants to sort of be your manager and surround, you know, make their life about your life. You want to find somebody who wants a good life on their own. You want to find somebody who has a sense of who they are. And so when you go, they're not calling you up and saying, oh, it's so lonely here. I call home and it's like, oh, Scott and Amy are over and we're having this potluck and tonight we have the, you know, this and that and we're going to see. And I think, wow, they're having so much fun. And yes, they're having fun. And Nance is so kind about scheduling all that stuff for the times that I'm gone. Because when I'm home, we do stuff together and we have a lot of time together and it's wonderful. And when I'm gone, life goes on. And that's a great thing. And the travel is a beautiful rhythm. It's a time of appreciating both sides of my life.
Yeah.
And there's this beautiful sort of pendulum swing where the gravity of each attracts me when I'm in the other. And so when I'm home and then there's 2 days till the next gig, I feel like, oh man, I just want to be home. I love being home. And I love raising this boy, and he's so wonderful, and I love being a part of all this, and I love fixing stuff around the house, and I love, you know, just doing the stuff that needs to be done. And then as it gets closer to the gig time, and I'm feeling like, oh man, it's going to be such a drag to have to leave, and then it gets to be the time to pack, and I make sure the sound gear is all there, and it feels kind of fun.
Yeah.
And I get my clothes ready, and I realize I'm good at this. And as I'm rolling the suitcase out to the car, I think, man, I love what I do.
Yeah.
And then I'm in this whole other sort of road warrior mode. I'm in this different mindset. I'll forget to call home for a day and a half, and I'll call home, and I'll just be, you know, like, oh my God, I heard the greatest song, you know, and Nance will be excited, and we'll talk about stories, so yes, you do need to find someone who chooses to be with someone who travels,
yeah.
And they're out there, and it's a beautiful thing when it happens, and it actually helps you appreciate what you have and not take it for granted.
So encouraging. Thank you. Well, do you have advice for me in my going out? When I leave Kerrville, do you have any advice for me that I should go do this first? Or?
I would say if you want to, like, write the song that changes the world, write the song that changes you. And if you want to write a song that will kind of move everyone, write a song that moves you. If you write a song that will try to, you know, kind of be all things for all people, it'll be nothing for nobody.
Yeah.
But if you write a song that is quirky and wonderful and specific and just grabs you, then people will feel that transformation. People will feel what the song did for you. They'll feel it in the way you sing it, in the affection you have for the experience that it gave you. And they'll connect not just to the song, but to the trust that you have in that whole process. And so if you want a song that will kind of take you to the farthest reaches of the world, then go home and write a song about the most interior part of you. And the more specific it is, the more universal it will be.
Well, thank you, David Wilcox, for your time and your fascinating insights on all this. And thank you, Allie, for being a terrific interviewer and making my life much easier on this. But this has been terrific. Thanks very much.
Thank you much. Let's hope it recorded.
Oh, yeah, I think we got it. Yeah, we got it.
Here's a picture of a bright blue bird standing on the open hand of a woman with long red hair on the edge of a windswept land. Long fall to the rocks below, dark thread of a storm behind. Light shines on her smiling face, looking up at these hills to climb. She can feel the wind right now, wash away her tracks and plans. If you wanna live this life, gotta hold it with an open hand. Open hand.
So there you have it. Let that sink in for a couple of weeks. And take some time to listen to Allie Ferris. She's still working on her new album in Nashville, but there's several songs and videos at her website, allieferris.com. David Wilcox, of course, has albums out the wazoo going back almost 25 years. His website is a treasure trove. He's got over 100 free streaming tracks organized by the listener's emotional state. Lots of videos. You can even buy sheet music for all his songs, and that's all up at davidwilcox.com. Thanks so much for listening. I want to give a special shout-out to Matt Switzer of Fort Wayne, Indiana. He is officially the first person to drop some real honest-to-heck money in my virtual tip jar. Matt, you're awesome. And I promise if I ever get any NPR-style swag, I'm sending you a coffee mug. If you'd like to join my elite group of supporters, make your way to thats.soundacious.com and click on the link at the top that says Make a Donation. There's options there for automatic PayPal payments every week or 2 weeks or month, and that can be a great way for you to help me out while hardly noticing the difference in your wallet. Right now, I really need you guys, because I'm getting ready to go to the Southwest Regional Folk Alliance in Austin this September. Any and all funds I receive are going toward that goal, and you, the listener, will reap some serious rewards in the form of awesome future episodes. I'll also be setting up camp at the New Orleans Songwriters Festival, so it's going to be a busy, busy autumn. As always, you can subscribe to the show through iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and anything you can do to tell the internet how awesome I is all... Ah. As always, you can subscribe to the show through iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and anything you can do to tell the internet how awesome I am is always appreciated. Upvote me, rate me, review me, dig, tweet, face, space, tube, the flavor's up to you. I'll be back in 2 weeks with a sampler of the Camp Stupid experience. Lots of music from awesome players that you've probably never heard of. That's what it's all about, really. In the meantime, please take the time to go out and listen to some local music. Those guys need your ears. That Soundacious is a production of the Soundacious Media Group, a tiny little family-owned media conglomerate on the coast of the Gulf of Mexico.